This is Audible.
Audible Inc. presents The Divine Comedy, written by Dante Alighieri and translated by Clive James, narrated by Eduardo Ballerini. Book 1. Hell. Canto 1. At the midpoint of the path through life, I found myself lost in a wood so dark the way ahead was blotted out. The keening sound I still make shows how hard it is to say, how harsh and bitter that place felt to me. Merely to think of it renews the fear, so bad that death, by only a degree, could possibly be worse. As you shall hear, it led to good things, too, eventually. But there and then I saw no sign of those, and can't say even now how I had come to be there, stunned and following my nose away from the straight path. And then, still numb from pressure on the heart, still in a daze, I stumbled on the threshold of a hill where trees no longer grew. Lifting my gaze, I saw its shoulders edged with overspill from our sure guide the sun, whose soothing rays at least a little melted what that night of dread had done to harden my heart's lake. And like someone who crawls, half-dead with fright, out of the sea and breathes, and turns to take a long look at the water, so my soul, still thinking of escape from the dark wood I had escaped, looked back to see it whole. The force field no one ever has withstood, and stayed alive. I rested for a while, and then resumed along the empty slope my journey, in the standard crofter's style, weight on the lower foot. Harder to cope when things got steeper, and a mountain cat, with party-colored pelt, light on its feet, in a trice was in my face and stayed like that, barring my way, encouraging retreat. Three beasts, was this the leopard, lechery, were said to block the penitential climb for sinners and for all society, and here was one sticking to me like lime. Not only did it hamper me, it made me think of turning back. Now was the time morning begins. The sun, fully displayed at last, began its climb, but not alone. The stars composing Aries, sign of spring, were with it now, nor left it on its own when the first love made every lovely thing the world can boast. A thought to give me heart, that I might counter in this gentle hour of a sweet season the obstructive art, pretty to see but frightful in its power, of that cat with the colored coat. But wait. If fear had waned, still there was fear enough to bring on pride, the lion in full spate. Head high, hot breath to make the air look rough, as rocks in summer seemed to agitate the atmosphere above them without cease, so rabid was its hunger. On its heels the wolf appeared, whose name is Avarice, made thin by a cupidity that steals insatiably out of its own increase, obtained from many people it made poor. This one propelled such terror from its face into my mind. All thoughts I had before of ever rising to a state of grace were crushed. And so, as one who, mad for gain, must find one day that all he gains is lost in a flood of tears, a conscience racked with pain, just so I felt my hopes came at the cost of being forced by this unresting beast, little by little down towards that wood, whose gloom the sun can never in the least irradiate. But all at once there stood before me one who somehow seemed struck dumb by the weight of a long silence. "Pity me, and try to tell me in what form you come," I cried. "Is it a shade or man I see?" And he replied, "No, not a man, not now. I was once, though, a Lombard. Parents born in Mantua, both born there." That was how his words emerged, as if with slow care torn, like pages of a book soaked shut by time from his clogged throat. "Caesar was getting on when I was young. That's Julius. A crime, his death. Then, after he was gone, I lived in Rome. The good Augustus reigned. The gods were cheats and liars. As for me, I was a poet." He grew less constrained in speech, as if trade talk brought fluency. I sang about Anchises' son, the just Aeneas, pious, peerless. When proud Troy was burned to ashes, ashes turned to dust, which he shook off his feet, that marvelous boy. He did what any decent hero must, set sail. But you turn back. Tell me why. Why not press on to the delightful peak? The root cause of all joy is in the sky. Almost too shocked and overawed to speak, for now the one who fought for words was I asked him, just as if I didn't know, Are you Virgil? Are you the spring, the well, the fountain, and the river in full flow, of eloquence that sings like a seashell, remembering the sea and the rainbow? Of all who fashion verse the leading light, the man of honor, what am I to say? Through learning you by heart, I learned to write. My love for your book turned my night to day. You are my master author. Only you could teach me the sweet style that they call mine. I could go on. But what am I to do about this animal that shows no sign of letting me proceed? It scares me so. My veins are empty, all the blood sucked back into the heart. There's nothing you don't know, my sage, so tell me how this mad attack can be called off. Then he, You need to choose another route. This while he watched me weep. This way there's no way out, you're bound to lose. Bound by the spell of this beast pledged to keep you crying, you or anyone who tries to get by. In a bad mood it can kill, and it's never in a good mood. See those eyes? So great a hunger nothing can fulfill. It eats, it wants more, like the many men infected by its bite. Its catalogue of victories will be finished only when another dog arrives, the hunting dog. The Veltro. As for now, it's hard to see even his outline through the glowing fog of the future, but be assured by me, the Veltro will make this thing die of shame for wanting to eat wealth and real estate. The Veltro's diet will be bigger game. Love, wisdom, virtue. It will operate in humble country, eat the humble bread of that sad Italy, where Trojans fought our local tribes, the Latium beachhead. The brave Princess Camilla there was brought to death in battle, and Prince Turnus too, killed by Aeneas, of whose Trojan friends Euryalus and Nisus died. The new great dog will harry this one to the ends of that scorched earth, and so back down to hell, from which, by envious Lucifer, it was first sent forth. But by now I've pondered well the path adapted best to serve your cause, so let me be your guide. I'll take you through the timeless breaker's yard, where you will hear the death cries of the damned who die anew each day, though dead already in the year. No dated stones remain to give a clue. The earliest sinners died when time began. And you'll see, in the next eternal zone, those so content with purging fire, they fan the flames around them, thankful to atone, hopeful of being raised to join the blessed. If you would join them too, we'll reach a stage when only someone else shows you the rest. Someone more worthy, though of tender age, beside me. I can't tell you her name yet, but what I can say is, the Emperor, who reigns on high, vows he will never let a non-believer, though I lived before belief was possible, see where he sits in judgment and in joy with the elect. Sad and afraid, but gathering my wits. Poet, I said, I ask you to effect, in the name of that God you will never see, an exit for me from this place of grief, and then an entry to where I would be, beyond the purging flames of which you tell, in sight of Peter's gate, though that relief demands for prelude that I go through hell. And then he moved, and then I moved as well. Canto 2. The day was dying, and the darkening air brought all the working world of living things to rest. I only sweated to prepare for war, the way ahead, the grind that brings the battler to hot tears for each yard gained, to bitter tears, and memories more real than what was real and which is thus retained, unblunted, edged with even sharper steel. My muse, my schooled and proven gift, help me. It's now or never. Fortify my mind with the vivifying skills of poetry. For what I saw needs art of a great kind. I saw great things. Give them nobility. Thus I began. Poet, I call my guide. Judge first my powers. Will they serve so high a purpose? Would you rather step aside than put me to this road? For you, not I, have told the world Aeneas, mortal still, went to another world and not to die. But if the adversary of all ill saw fit to let him live, thinking of who and what he was, princely progenitor of everything that Rome would be and do in times to come, who could deserve it more? A man of intellect, the soul of Rome and all its empire, he was singled out there where the light eternal has its home at the highest level. Also, what about that city? Though the world fell at its feet, Rome was created first so that one day great Peter's followers might have their seat enthroned by the divine will. When you say Aeneas sailed to victory, what he heard along the way ensured not only that, but the papal mantle. So the holy word sent backwards into time, aimed only at your hero, hit the mark. And then Paul's ship, the chosen vessel, came to Rome as well. The vessel, in a sense, that faith might sip renewal from, and did. But now, pray tell, why me? Who says that I get to go there? Do I look like Aeneas? Am I Paul? Not I nor anyone I know would dare to put me in that company at all. Therefore, if I persuade myself to go, I trust I'll not be punished as a fool. Wise man, what I have not said you must know. Just so, obeying the unwritten rule, that one who would unwish that which he wished, having thought twice about what first he sought, must put fish back into the pool he fished, so they, set free, may once again be caught. Just so did I in that now shadowy fold, because by thinking I'd consumed the thought I started with, that I had thought so bold. If I have understood your words aright, magnanimously the great shade replied, your soul is crumbling from the needless blight of misplaced modesty, which is false pride reversed, and many men by this are swayed from honorable enterprise. One thinks of a dreaming beast that wakes with temper frayed, and finds the prowler into whom it sinks its teeth does not exist. Upon that head, that you be free of fear, I'll tell you why I came and what I felt when I was led first to your quaking side by your far cry. Along with all those caught between desire to see the one above and sheer despair that they will never even see hell fire, I was in limbo. Out of the open air she stepped and stood, and then she called my name, a woman beatific, beautiful. Her scintillating eyes outshone the flame of stars. To disobey? Impossible. I begged her to command me. She gave voice. It was an angel's voice, restrained and sweet. Courteous soul of Mantua, rejoice. Your fame lives on, exalted and complete, and will throughout the world from end to end until the world ends. But I need you now. In a deserted hillside field, my friend is fortune's enemy and can't see how to make his way. Terror could turn him back. I'm not sure if he's not already dead, or if I've come in time to clear the track that leads him, as in heaven I've heard said, to salvation. So if you would obey, go to him, and with all your verbal art, with anything it takes, show him the way. Do this for me, for I am sick at heart. My name is Beatrice. Now you know your task. Where I come from and long to be restored, love rules me. It determines what I ask. When I am once again before my Lord, then I to him whom all praise will praise you. Her melody was done, then I to her. Woman of quality, know this is true. One look at you, and I knew who you were. For only through that quality the race of men raised by that quality, virtue, can hope to set their eyes on the high place beyond any contentment they enjoy under the lower sky ruled by the moon. So glad am I to be in your employ. I'd not have carried out my task too soon if I'd already done it. Enough said. I was persuaded even as you spoke. But tell me this. Why do you feel no dread coming down here into this pall of smoke, this ball of fire that pulses at the core of the higher world to which you would return? She spoke again. A little, but no more, to satisfy a mind still keen to learn, I'll tell you why to come here holds no threat for me. Your Aristotle gets it right. All fearful things we safely can forget, except those which, allowed their freedom, might cause harm to others. God in mercy made me such that all your miseries touch me not, nor do the flames of this condemned arcade scorch one hair of my head. But now to what most matters? Take due note of this, great shade. There is a woman in the sky laments for the unfortunate I send you to. Her pain at his entrapment is intense. She is the virgin, and like me to you, she told Lucy, the spirit of all grace, grace that illuminates like the spring sun, the soul within, you see it in her face, she told Lucy, right now your faithful one has need of you. You are my choice to go. Lucy, beside whom cruelty has none to match her as an enemy, did so, and came to where I sat with dear Rachel, the soul of contemplation, as you know. You loved your books and candlelight so well. Beatrice, said Lucy, hear me, you that are the picture of God's praise. Why do you not bring help to him whose love for you so far exceeded that of all the common lot who loved you too? Do you not hear his screams of agony? Do you not see the death he battles on the river of bad dreams, deeper than any ocean? In a breath, for never was one quicker in the world, whether to gain a point or flee his fate, than I was when I heard those words. I hurled myself from that serene, unhurried state, like a thrown stone down here, putting my trust in you, your honest tongue that draws to you honor from all who listen, as truth must. Thus, Beatrice. Then she turned away, a new luster appearing in her shining glance. Her tears, which spurred me quickly to your side, as she asked, lest this beast should seize its chance to cut the straightest road, and you abide far from the lovely mountain. So then, why? Why falter, weakling? Why so faint a heart? Why doubt there is a highway in the sky that leads to where all doubts are set apart? Where is your courage? Where your inner steel? Three women loved in heaven do their best to make you loved there too, and still you feel no shame at shrinking down inside your nest, afraid of your first flight. This isn't real. And what of me, who promised you much good it did, claiming to like my book? Does the hero's story shame you? So it should. Catching the firmness in his still fond look, as the little flowers bent by the night's cold and closed and smooth on the outside like gems, when sunlight lights them, straighten and unfold, and open opulently on stiff stems, so did I find in my depleted strength. the strength of mind to lift my heart again. I thanked them both at last, if not at length. Would she were here who came to my aid when I was most lost? My thanks can have no end. This is the start. And you, my guiding light, who listened to her like a loving friend, of mine as well as hers, with second sight you saw into my soul and said the things that needed to be said for a return to my first purpose. Thank you for what brings my will and yours together, what I learn from my teacher, master, leader, so I said. On the high, hard road, I followed, and he led. Canto 3. To enter the lost city, go through me. Through me you go to meet a suffering unceasing and eternal. You will be with people who through me lost everything. My Maker, moved by justice, lives above. Through him the holy power I was made, made by the height of wisdom and first love, whose laws all those in here once disobeyed. From now on, every day feels like your last, forever. Let that be your greatest fear. Your future now is to regret the past. Forget your hopes. They were what brought you here. Dark both in color and in what they meant, these words incised upon a city gate, I read and whispered, Master, the intent of this inscription makes me hesitate. And he to me, reading my secret mind, said, Here you must renounce your slightest doubt, and kill your every weakness. Leave behind all thoughts of safety first, or be shut out. We have arrived where all those who have lost the sum of intellect, which is the Lord, bewail their fate, and always count the cost, forever far more than they can afford. I told you of this place. He held my hand, and even smiled, which gave some comfort when he led me through the gate to a strange land, where sighs and moans and screams of ruined men, filling the air beneath a starless sky, resounded everywhere, and everywhere was there inside me. I began to cry, stunned by the sound of an unseen nightmare. Inhuman outcries in all human tongues, bad language, bursts of anger, yelps of pain, shrill scrambled messages from aching lungs, and clapped hands, self-applause of the insane. All this was whipped by its own energy into a timeless tumult without form, dark as a whirlpool in a dead black sea, or a whirlwind sucking sand into a storm. Ears ringing to the center of my brain from horror. Master, what furor is this? I asked. Who are they so distraught with pain? Then he. Their pride to have no prejudice, seeking no praise for fear of taking blame. They were for nothing, nor were they against. They made no waves, and so they made no name. Now their neutrality is recompensed, for here there is no cautious holding back. Voices once circumspect are now incensed, and raised to make each other's eardrums crack. Thus they are joined to that self-seeking squad of angels fitted neither to rebel against, nor put their heartfelt faith in God. Hunted from heaven and locked out of hell, because the perfect sky would brook no blur, and in the lower depths the rebels prize the glory won from being what they were, not the non-entities that they despised. And I, but Master, what could grieve them so, to make them not just so sad but so loud? And he, to put it briefly, they have no death to look forward to. Their only shroud will be this darkness. They are condemned to live in envy always, even of the damned. The world that gives fame to a fugitive gave none of that to them. Instead it slammed the door on them. And as for him on high, his mercy and his justice he withdraws. They never even get to see the sky that will not have them. But we should not pause so long for wastrels weeping for what's gone. Enough of this. All that there is to see, you've seen. It's nothing. Time that we moved on. But I, wide-eyed in that cacophony, saw something that my gaze could fix upon at last. An ensign, twisting without rest because it knew no victory or defeat, and fast behind it ran a crowd, I guessed, no frightened city taking to its feet to flee an earthquake could outnumber. So many there were, I would not have believed death had undone so many. There was no obstruction now to vision. Those who grieved were in plain sight, and some I recognized. Among them, Celestine, of heart so faint, he made the great refusal. If he prized the papal throne, and some call him a saint, so much he should have sat on it, and not left it to be usurped by Boniface, who ruined Florence. Rooted to this spot, I saw and knew for certain that this race of never-living sprinters were the ones who once believed fence-sitting no disgrace, but now they sit no more. The whole bunch runs naked, with flies and wasps to stimulate their actions at long last, and their scratched cheeks spill blood that joins with tears to satiate. A soup lapped from their footsteps as it leaks, the mass of squirming worms that forms their track. And when I look beyond, I saw the bank of a mighty river, and another pack of people. I said, Master, whom I thank for secret knowledge, let me be allowed to know who these ones are, and why they seem so ready with a single mind endowed to cross in this grim light so great a stream. And he, This matter I will speak upon when you and I, like them, come to a halt at that sad river called the Acheron. My gaze cast down in shame, fearing my fault of curiosity stuck in his throat, I kept my silence until we were there, when suddenly an old man in a boat headed towards us, tossing his white hair as he cried, Woe to you and to your souls! Give up your hopes of heaven! I have come to take you to the other side. Hot coals and ice await to brand you and benumb in everlasting shadow. As for you, you living one, this route is for the dead. Leave it to them. But when I did not do his bidding, By another way, he said, through other ports and to a different shore your passage will be worked, but not through here. For you a lighter boat than mine's in store. And then my leader, Charon, never fear. All this is wanted there, where what is willed is said and done, so more than that don't ask. At these hard words the bristling jaws were stilled, and the eyes blinked in the wrinkled flame-red mask of the ferry pilot of the pitch-black marsh. But all those naked souls unhinged by fate changed color when they heard that speech so harsh. Clicking their bared, chipped teeth in hymns of hate, they cursed their parents, God, the human race, the time, the temperature, the place of birth, their mother's, father's, brother's stupid face, and everything of worth or nothing worth that they could think of. Then they squeezed up tight together, sobbing on the ragged edge that waits for all who hold God in despite. Charon, the demon, with hot coals for eyes, herds them yet closer with time-tested signs. To anyone who lingers he applies his oar, and as the autumn redefines a branch by taking off its dead leaves, one by one, until the branch looks down and knows its own dress, falling as it comes undone, so Adam's bad seed, grain by bad grain, throws itself from that cliff, not just at a run, but flying, as the falcon to the glove swoops home when signaled. Out across the black water they flock, where at the heights above that they have left, without a pause, go back to being thick with people, a dark spring, filling the branch for its next emptiness. My son, from many countries they take wing, my master said. but just the one distress collects them here. God's wrath, in which they died, came from his justice, which now turns their fear into desire to see the other side. No soul worth saving ever comes through here, so Charon's anger you can understand, and understand why he spoke in that tone. At which point the dark ground we stood on heaved, so violently the shock wave can still soak my memory with sweat. As if it grieved, the earth wept while it moved, and plumes of smoke went sideways with the wind. A red light shone. My reeling senses gave out. I was gone. Canto 4. Into my soundly dreaming head there broke a sudden thunder so loud that I shook like one shaken awake. When I awoke, with sight restored, I rose and took a look around me, keen to know where I might be. I and my guide, the man who wrote the book on quests and questions, doubts and destiny. And true it was that I was on the edge of the great pit of the piteous abyss, where sad cries have the dubious privilege of gathering in perpetual synthesis, and griefs already infinite are by their own great number multiplied to swell uproar to an eruption. It was hell. And as it sounded, so it looked, all bad. Even the clouds were dark. I couldn't tell how far it went down. It was deeply sad. "Now we descend into the sightless well," my poet said, and paused. His cheeks were pale. "First me, then you." And I, at having seen him, seemed to flinch, said, "How shall I not fail, if this scares you, when usually you've been the one to calm my fears?" And he to me, "It is the anguish of those locked below that paints my face with pity. What you see and fear is something else. It's time to go. A long road calls." And thus, compelled by him who had compelled himself, I took a breath, and entered the first ring around the rim of that great wellhead's endless wall of death. I was in Circle One. To the extent that I could hear at all cries were sighs. The air without end shook to the lament, not just of men and women. With surprise, I saw young children, too. Why were they sent? I thought. And once again my master saw into my mind and said, "You do not ask who these ones are, why here, and by what law. I'll tell you before we resume our task of pain without a sin. But though they be ever so virtuous, no unbaptized souls are exempted from this penalty. And if they lived before his son, they prized God insufficiently. And I was one of those. For such defects, and for no crime more grave, we're lost. For something left undone, we're doomed to live without hope for all time." When I heard this, a great grief seized my heart, because I knew that people of much worth in ancient sciences and every art had been sent down by accident of birth to limbo. "Tell me, master, for I must know this," I begged him, needing to be told my faith was not just powerful, but just. "Has even one of all this place can hold ever got out, by merit of his own or someone else's grace, to join the blessed?" And he, aware of the doctrinal bone I picked at, said, "I had not joined the rest down here for long, when someone of true power, crowned with a blaze of glory, came to choose from this tremendous garden, flower by flower, the lucky few from all he would refuse. Plucked from the dark and lifted to the light were Adam, Abel, Noah, Moses, he who gave the law and kept the law in sight, and Abraham the patriarch was free, King David, Jacob, Isaac and their seed, and Rachel, for whom Jacob 40 years worked out the price and thereby proved his need. And there were many others left their tears behind and went to be beatified. But never before them was human soul delivered out of here," so said my guide. but saying so, did not pause in his role of leader. We continued passing through the forest, thick with spirits. Not so far from where I'd slept, I noticed something new. Ahead of us, beginning as a bar of light, it swelled to form a hemisphere of fire that through the shadows burned a dome, and from a good way off I guessed that here some honorable people had their home. My sage, so honored in all fields of art and science, who are these that by such light are honored too, all others set apart? And he to me, divine grace shines its bright approval on them for the fame they earned, and still have in the world by what they made. Here glory burns again as there it burned. A voice inside the radiant arcade responded with a ringing antiphon. All hail the greatest poet, for his shade returns that we had thought was gone. When silence had come back to fill the space, the voice had left when it went still. I saw four great shades come towards us, and each face was neither glad nor sad. My guide said more. Behold the one with upright sword in hand. He walks by right before the other three, for he is Homer, who put his Greek brand on all the Romans, not excluding me. If you could read him, you would understand why we who can verge on idolatry in praising him. Horace the satirist is that one there, then Ovid, Lucan last. Because that voice put my name on its list with these, it did me honor unsurpassed. So I saw gathered the immortal school of him who sang below the walls of Troy, and over all who write shall always rule like a watchful eagle in its high employ, spreading its wings on winds we know are there, only because it glides across the sky so easily, as if born in the air, and never to descend, even to die. And after they had talked a little while, they turned, with signs of fellowship, to me. Whereat I saw my master broadly smile, and still more honor from that company. They said that I was with them from now on, sixth of their school, the College of the Wise. And so it was, until the light was gone. We walked and talked of what I must surmise were best left unsaid now. But when said then was fit, and dare I say it, flattering. Such words I hardly hope to hear again, but just to hear them once meant everything. Surrounded seven times by one high wall inside another, plus a pretty stream as moat, a castle noble, strong and tall, now stood before us. As if in a dream, we walked across the water. Seven gates I passed through with my five wise ones, until we reached a fresh green lawn. The ancient greats awaited us. Their eyes were grave and still, their features full of calm authority. Sparely they spoke, in voices sweet and soft. There were so many that to count them we withdrew to a well-lighted place aloft. From there, above the green enamel, I looked down on each and every face of fame, the sight of which I'd been exalted by already, only now I heard the name. Electra, whose beloved son built Troy, and whose companion sought end in flame or died defending it. I heard with joy that this was Hector, this Aeneas. There, just as essential for a later age, was Caesar with his griffin's fiery stare. Princess Camilla stood at center stage with Penthesilea, the warlike queen of the Amazons, she whom Achilles slew. And the king of Latium was on the green, as was Lavinia his daughter. Who would not be moved to know this was the first Brutus, the one who laid proud Tarquin low? Lucrezia, wife of Collatine, well versed in grace, and Caesar's daughter whom we know as wife to Pompey, the chaste Julia. And Marcia, Cato's wife, Cornelia too, daughter to Scipio of Africa and mother of the Gracchi. Names I knew only from books, without reserve revealed how they had looked, except the Saladin. Sadly by robes of shadow part concealed, He helped our age of learning to begin, but had another faith. Lifting my gaze a little, one I saw who sat in state among the family of philosophers, their father of all thinkers the most great, Aristotle. Looking up to him in praise, like all the others, even Socrates and Plato who preceded him, were each lost in their awe of his abilities at amplifying what they'd had to teach, the moral law. There was Democritus, who said the world is made of tiny parts that interact by chance unseen by us, Diogenes and Anaxagoras, Thales, Empedocles were side by side, and Heraclitus, who said any mass, even if still moves. There, in his pride, was Zeno, Stoicism's founding voice, and next to him was Dioscorides, the herb collector. I was spoiled for choice. Where next to look among these prodigies? And I saw Orpheus and Cicero, Linus and Seneca the moralist, Euclid and Ptolemy. There in a row were famous adepts first to get the gist of modern medicine and help it grow. Hippocrates and Galen were the two Arabs who led the world in this respect. Avicenna, then Averroes, who wrote down what both could conjure and confect in his commentary that none doubts to be true. And these, and all those others on the lawn, so many giants of the intellect, were like the first sun rays that build the dawn. I can't speak fully of them all. My theme is vast, and drives me on so that the facts often exhaust my words. Again a team of two, we entered into cataracts of trembling air, all quietness left behind, where no light shines, and all who see are blind. Canto 5. So we descended out of Circle 1 to Circle 2, the less in measurement, the greater in its sad cries fit to stun the senses. Here, deciding who will be sent to which reception, the selector looms whose name is Minos. Horrible to see. He's worse to see in action. Separate dooms for separate deeds, betokened by how he runs rings around himself with his long tail, so many turns for such and such a fault. The tortured souls, confessing without fail, are thus assigned to that drawer in the vault this connoisseur of turpitude may deem appropriate, while to his platform comes another load to share the same wild dream. They watch his living bullwhip do its sums, always for others, not for them, not yet. And then it's their turn. As they count the loops that weigh the crimes they hoped he might forget, and down they go, sad army, naked troops, to find their level. You that come to stay at this unlucky lodge, watch where you tread and whom you trust, Minos was moved to bray. The width of hell's mouth doesn't mean the dead who get in ever get to go away. My leader spoke for me. Shout till you drop. His travel papers bear a sacred seal. This thing is wanted where the moot points stop and certainties begin. There's no appeal. Here, after limbo, as I had before, I heard the countless outcries of lament combine to strike me as a constant roar. This was a place where every light was spent. It ranted as the sea does in a storm that splits its own winds to go left or right, shrieking in all directions. Thus the form of the infernal tempest. Day and night the same, forever shapeless, without rest, it rends and roils the spirits with its force. They are the smeared signs of how it is blessed. Their cries can testify to its remorse. And when they come to where the rocks are cracked by background pressure, and a fissure gapes before them, then we hear the law attacked that brought them to this pass so none escapes, as all yell their complaints at that brute fact. I understood this was the punishment for carnal sinners who let appetite rule reason, and who, once drawn, are now sent like winter starlings by their wings in flight, across the bleak sky in a broad, thick flock. Here, there, now up, now down, the winds dictate their track. Small hope of pausing to take stock of whether anguish might not soon abate, at least a little, and no hope at all of peace. And as the cranes sing when they fly, in a long line attracting with their call, our eyes to them as they move through the sky, just so I now saw souls borne on the wind, trailing their cries of grief towards the spot where we stood. "Who are these? How have they sinned?" I asked my master. "Dare to tell me what dooms them to be so harshly disciplined." "The first of those of whom you would have news was Empress of many peoples," so explained my master. "Willing neither to refuse demands from her own lust, nor to be stained by rules against it, she rewrote the law to make praiseworthy what had been her vice, and vicious what was virtuous before. Her name is Semiramis. More than twice as bad as her hot blood was her incest. She married her own son, so they could rule the Sultan's lands, Egypt and all the rest. The next is Dido, queen of Carthage, cruel to the ashes of her husband, whom she slew herself because of love. Not love for him, but for Aeneas. Cleopatra, too, that dark one there. Desire led to a grim reckoning. Behold Helen, in whose name a sea of trouble came to Troy in ships, and Paris knew it was a sea of flame, the fire that started when he kissed her lips. And there's Tristan. 1,000 more at least he named, the shades who left our life for love, the gentle women of a time long ceased to be, and all their cavaliers. Above my head, the waves of fear closed and increased their turbulence, and I was almost lost. Then I to him, "My poet, I would speak with those two." By the ill wind swept and tossed, as light as dead leaves on a mountain creek, who do not fly alone but as a pair. And he to me, "Call out when they can hear in the name of love that leads them through the air, and they will come to you." When they draw near, I spoke. "Tormented spirits, come to us, if someone else does not forbid you to. You fly for love, and love we should discuss, though it stirs shades into a witch's brew." And as when doves that long for their sweet nest see it, and with their stiffened wings spread wide, moved only by desire come home to rest, so these from Dido's squadron turned aside, and down through the malignant atmosphere, they came to us in an unerring glide. So deeply had my summons to appear touched them. O being gracious and benign, visiting us in air whose darkness is tinged by the blood of all in our long line, if the Emperor of the Universe, in his great mercy, were our friend, then we would pray for your repose, because of your distress at our sad fate. What you would have us say, let's hear about, now that the wind blows less, so we may speak before it howls once more. So she began, he silent in assent. Born where the paw descends to the seashore to meet its followers and rest content, I was a beauty. Love in gentle hearts strikes quickly, and the fair form I once had before I cruelly lost it by dark arts that still offend me, quickly drove him mad. Love pardons no one loved from love, and I was drawn to him with what force you can see. It still holds me beside him as we fly. Love gave two lives, one death for destiny. As for who killed us, Cain will help him die. Those stricken souls, through her we heard them speak, and when I understood the full import of what was said, as if my neck grew weak, I hung my head. My guide said, "Lost in thought." I was indeed. When I could breathe, I said, "Alas, So many sweet shared thoughts and things brought them this fate they think unwarranted. Thus I to him, to them, your sufferings, Francesca, make me weep for grief and more. But tell me, in that time of your sweet sighs, in that first flush, how love made you both sure of what you half saw in each other's eyes. And she to me, life brings no greater grief than happiness remembered in a time of sorrow. And he knows that well, your chief, who now walks in a world of dust and grime, when he once took bright laurels as his due. But if to know the one true origin of our love means so very much to you, then even as I weep, I will begin, reading together one day for delight of Lancelot, caught up in love's sweet snare. Were we alone, with no thought of what might occur to us, although we stopped to stare sometimes at what we read and even paled, but then the moment came we turned a page, and all our powers of resistance failed. When we read of that great knight in a rage, to kiss the smile he so desired, Paolo, this one so quiet now, made my mouth still, which, loosened by those words, had trembled so with his mouth. And right then we lost the will, for love can will will's loss as well, you know, to read on. But let that man take a bow, who wrote the book we called our Galahad, the reason nothing can divide us now. One spoke as if she almost might be glad, the other wept as if forgetting how to stop. And I fainted dead away, and went down, as if going down to stay. Canto Six. When I came round and was no longer blind, my pity for that self-deluding pair gave me much grief, and grief had closed my mind. I saw new types of torment everywhere around me, so no matter where I turned, were the tormented. This was Circle Three, and here there was no fire and nothing burned. Instead, a dark, cold rain falls heavily forever. At a rigidly fixed rate and steady density, the muck descends through shadow air already dark as slate. The fall of dirty water never ends, with hail and snow mixed in. The soaked earth reeks. The people stuck in it have Cerberus to guard them. Overhead that creature shrieks in anger with three mouths, each hideous as a mad dog's. Beards greasy black, eyes red, big belly, fingers well supplied with nails, he scores and scrapes and tears them to a shred, those that the rain already hardly fails to make howl. And they turn from side to side, as if they could keep something unbesmirched by his paws, though they have no goods to hide. No house but this remaining to be searched. When Cerberus the hulking worm got wind that he was not alone, he never is, in view of how he's made. He turned and grinned. His hungry mouths displayed those teeth of his in six rows. Every limb was quivering. My leader spread his hands, and to his wrists he dug down through the slop so he might fling the loads of firmer sludge caught in his fists into those gulping throats, and like three hounds that yelped for greed but shut up when they eat, the monster made the small contented sounds it doesn't make for souls spread at its feet. Those we passed over, where they lay prostrate, gripped by the mud and held down by the rain. We trod on ghosts as if their actual state were human, and they did not flinch in vain. Supine or prone, they all lay stretched out flat, except for one who sat up when he saw us pass and said, "You that I'm looking at, instead of through, because no fatal flaw yet sends you here to stay, do you know me? You should, for you were born before I died." And I to him, "Perhaps my memory aims at the mark you set, but wanders wide, through air unsettled by your agony. But tell me who you are, and why sent here to such a punishment that none more great could well be worse, so much it fills with fear a visitor not marked for the same fate. And he to me, "Our city, then as now, a sack of envy stuffed to spill its load, I spoke for in the world where I knew how to put myself about my sharpest goad, the supper I sang for. Chacco," they said, "sit down and eat." And now it's here I sit, wrecked by the rain because of broken bread, like anyone too fond of eating it, like all those here now. See how we are fed. And I replied, "Chacco, your moans of pain meet mine, and I am almost moved to tears. But if there is foreknowledge you retain, then tell me if just one just one appears to save the city, what becomes of them, the disunited Florentines? And how did all this start? What snapped the diadem that once encircled the untroubled brow of Santa Reparata? Diplomats you were. You know things. Give me what you know." Then he to me, "At first the usual spat or two, then drawn-out tension, then the blow-by-blow expansion, then the all-out fight between the blacks and whites. With due offense the whites drove out the blacks. Day follows night, and in 3 years the blacks come back. Immense success, with help from Boniface. In tears, the whites find out the hard way that their shame is just the start of payment in arrears for the crime of losing. Two men have the name of being just, but no one listens. Three real motives: envy, avarice, and pride. Fires of the Florentines, as you will see." And I to him, although I knew my guide, grew restive. "Still, there's something I would know ahead of time. Those men who wish no ill, Teghiaio, Farinata, Jacopo Rusticucci, and Arrigo, Mosca, will I find they rose to grace, or do they weep?" And he to me, "The whole bunch rot in hell, black souls that different faults have driven deep. Go down that far, you'll see how far they fell. But if it's true you're going all the way back to the sweet world, tell them who you met. They might remember. That's all I can say." Whereat his gaze still fixed on mine, he bent his head and lay back down to join the blind. My leader said, "Until the air is rent by the angel's trumpet, and the dead shall find their graves take fleshly form, and here resound the eternal echoes, and shall be decreed by the last judge, this one, held by his ground, will never awake again. Shall we proceed?" And so, with slow steps, fording the foul blend of shades and rain, we moved, our speech concerned, with life beyond the tomb. "After the end, what starts?" I asked. "Will all those who have earned their place down here feel less pain from the day of judgment on, or just the same, or more?" And he to me, "What does your science say?" "The more a thing's more perfect than before, the more it takes delight or feels despair. Although these damned will never know a true perfection, they'll be closer to it there, beyond that day. So, much more than they do must be the answer to your question." We had walked the inner edge of that great ring, with much more talk about theology than I have room or time for rendering. We reached the entrance to a lower zone, but first the fearsome Plutus stood alone. Canto 7.
"The Pope pops Satan. Satan pips the Pope."
Plutus barked raucous nonsense, while my guide, who knew all things, to give me back my hope, said, "Don't let fear of him turn you aside. Whatever power he has will never stretch to stopping your descent to the next stage." And turning to the fat lips of the wretch,
"Wolf, shut your mouth," he said. swallow your rage, and let it eat your guts. He goes with cause into the depths, for it is willed on high where Michael the Archangel planned the wars against the rebels. As when all winds die, and sails once swollen flap and fall in folds, just so the beast lay flat. We left it so, and down to Circle 4, and what it holds for its share of the universe of woe contained in the immeasurable pit, we went. Merciful God, who gets it in, this wretched harvest? What accounts for it? And why to such pain are we led by sin? For just as waves above the clashing jaws of Scylla and Charybdis rush to fight each other, so these shades danced without pause, more of them that had so far met my sight. From either side damned souls let out a shout, and roll weights with their chests until they crash together, whereupon they turn about and shriek, "Why pile it up?" and "Why waste cash?" and work in a half-circle to the point oppressed, still giving out their spiteful yell, and turn to joust again. "Heart out of joint," I said. "My master, who are these, pray tell? And were these tonsured ones here to the left once clerics?" He to me, "Yes, all of them in their first life were so of sense bereft. They spent like wastrels, and thus they condemn their madness, barking every time they find themselves returned to either of the two opposing points at which their faults of mind divide them. One and all were clerics who, heads sticking through their hair, were ruled by greed. There are popes here, and cardinals, and I, my guide, should I not then in such a breed see faces that I can identify, famous for sins of avarice and waste?" My master answered thus, "That thought is vain. In life for their dim sight they were disgraced. Here they are dimly seen and must remain forever split in two charging teams. Those money-grubbing ones who from the grave arise with grasping fists and foolproof schemes, and these with hair close-cropped to show they gave, as those took, a two-sided robbery that stole the world from both and set them here in this unprepossessing scrum that we lack words to dignify. You see it clear, my son. The squalid fraud as brief as life of goods consigned to fortune, whereupon cool heads come to the boil, hands to the knife. For all the gold there is, and all that's gone, would give no shred